British poet Lucas Jones has become an international literary sensation by pairing deeply personal poetry with the reach of social media, earning millions of readers drawn to his candid reflections on modern life. His new collection, I Still Believe in Miracles, is an instant bestseller that explores masculinity, love, grief, hope, and the search for connection in an often fractured world. Blending vulnerability with resilience, Jones writes about heartbreak and healing with incredible emotional clarity. He is a London-based writer, poet, actor. He has emerged as one of a new generation of voices bringing contemporary poetry to an expansive and devoted audience. And it is a great pleasure to have Lucas Jones on our program this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm all the better for that wonderful introduction. Thank you so much. That was very kind of you.
And, well, I appreciate you. I greatly appreciate you being here. I admittedly stumbled upon your work, and when I did, I was just really truly amazed by it. I love the idea that allowed it to come to be, which really was this idea of I Still Believe in Miracles. Talk a little bit about that you can find meaning in difficult times.
Yeah, I think I have found in myself that I write from a place of fear, I think. I think my initial sort of the impetus for what I, the reason I try to express anything, I think initially in my life is to self-soothe, to make sense of the chaos of this reality. And I, in this crazy days, time and age we're living in, I think more than ever, maybe we need somewhere to sort of collectively come and remember what it is that we're all seeking and what the mission is. So to me, I think the title sort of is, we noticed by accident when that title came about that the word miracle was in the book about 20 times without intention and just happened to be sort of strewn across the whole book. And I think it's because that's sort of my only, how to word this, what was it I'm trying to say exactly? I think it's that with the sort of way that my life's been set up in the last, you know, 15 years or 12 years of being an artist, it leaves you in this situation where you're very sort of raw and without much structure. And I've had to sort of put my life together through these works of art in order to understand my own reason for doing this, if that makes sense. So the book has kind of become this sort of like reminder and mission of what I think it is I should be pursuing and why I should be writing in the first place. And I think it's kind of the hope that comes with that is all I really have. It's a very long-winded answer to
none at all. Question, but one of the things I find so fascinating about your work is that it often seems to, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems to come from a place of anger or frustration or disappointment, but it seems to then be delivered without the anger.
Oh, that's a really beautiful observation. I think you're right. I think you're more right than I've even properly thought about. Yeah, there is a lot of anger in there. And I think there is a lot of frustration and disappointment and confusion. But the reminder at the end of that is that that's not going to serve me. That's not going to serve us, I don't think. I think utilizing, well, I say that, I think anger can be a positive emotion if it's acknowledged, felt, and then you react with love and you react with it. I know that's sometimes a bit of a trite thing to say, but I really mean it. I think it's all we really have. And so in the book, it sort of feels like there's this constant fight between the catalyst of some chaos and trying to soothe that with love and trying to sort of answer that with, how do we, like, yeah, it's all broken. I think it's one of the first, the sort of introduction to the book kind of says, it's all fallen apart, it's all done, it's all dead, it's all over. And now what? Like, what option do we have? What do we do with that? We can either be hurt and wounded by that and continue that hurt and woundedness, or we can try and find something positive to lean towards. And so I think it's trying to say that constantly in the book.
So how did you fall into this in the sense of writing the work and then presenting it the way you present it online?
Well, so to take you back about 3-odd years ago, I was living in this small studio flat in London. Everything was chaos in my life. My rent wasn't paid and everything was, I was sort of the cliche classic artist in the city who had chosen to make art over eating. And I mean that in like a not even in a fun sexy way. I mean that in like a scary sort of I look back at photos with my wife and I look back at photos from that period when we first met the other day, and I was really skinny in a way that was like not any sort of I didn't realize how far it'd gone in a way. And so I was sitting in my studio flat in London, South London, and I'd written a few, I'd been in the band for a long time before that, years ago, and I'd written poetry, I'd written film scripts, I'd been active for 10 years, but I'd never made a collection that I intended to have in print and have, you know, like to self-publish. And I thought, genuinely actually, which was my honest answer, I thought if I can get 100 books together cheaply and I can flip them to friends and family, I might be able to cover my rent and I might be able to sort of, you know, survive another month in the city kind of thing.
Right.
And so I put this collection together with the intention to sort of just to, you know, sell it to friends and family. And in doing so, I started reading the poems out online, which was new. I hadn't done that before. I'd always written sort of post things online. But and quite quickly, they went viral. And people started sharing them, and people I really respect and artists I really admire started sharing them. And there was a sudden demand for this self-published book. And I just try to meet the demand and try to stay as sort of attuned to that as possible. So in terms of a practical literal sense, this sort of process of published writing started from a place of kind of like I need to survive, which is funny because I think I've talking about what I was saying earlier, like I think I've always sort of survived with writing. It's just this was the first time that it practically allowed me to survive. That was sort of the impetus of this saga of my writing.
So let me take two of the things that we've just talked about and meld them together. And one of them is that we talked a moment ago about the idea of joy and miracles, but also the idea of sharing this online. Well, this has struck people. And I think that's really what's so fascinating is that there seems to be a great thirst for that. And people want to have something to hold on to that you are providing through this work.
Yeah, that's been the thing that surprised me most, I think. And the specific audience the thing I hear the most is people be like, oh, I'm not really into poetry. I never picked up poetry before, but I just saw this and it really landed me and I bought the book straight away and I haven't stopped reading it. That's the thing I hear the most. And my experience moving through the world is I run into people these days very gratefully who are quite into the writing, and the demographic of that audience never ceases to amaze me. It would be the classic sort of, you know, what you'd expect a poetry audience to look like, sort of, you know, like liberal leaning internet users of like my demographic and age. And then there'd be like boys from South London with their gym bags and stolen line bikes making the click and clacking sound that it makes when you've stolen one, who will stop me in the street and be like, oh bro, I love your stuff's sick, man. And that always, and builders, the other day I was walking through the street and this guy jumped out of his work van and was like, mate, do you want to say, read your book, my wife passed away and I'm really grateful. You know, like that kind of, and it's like this, there's this sort of groundedness to it that I'm so grateful that it's managed to permeate into that, because that's kind of how I grew up around people like that. And that's my kind of community. And it's, I think the fact that it's just resonating back to its source means a lot to me.
A lot of this has to do, I think, I mean, it reads beautifully, but I will admit that I first came to it and having you read it, whether that be through the audiobook or through online and through the various social media platforms. That has a lot to do with it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, I hope at least, what people maybe resonate with is like, it's hard to say this by yourself without sounding a little bit navel gazing, but I just mean I'm always striving to remove the pretense from the delivery and to just to speak the quote Shakespeare, to speak the speech and just to say it as it is, rather than sort of falling into the sort of classic or the modern sort of spoken word rhythm that you see quite commonly, which has its space and is beautiful, but I think that is a part of it. It's sort of the delivery. I always try and just say it, say the words without, you know, as if they're arriving.
But there's a rhythm to it. I mean, there's a performative aspect to it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I like came up on listening to a lot of like Bob Dylan's poetry when he's like reading a lot from like a bootleg live performance, and that kind of like fast sort of weird intonation. I think I listened to a lot of that growing up, like Talking John Birch Blues, that kind of thing. Yeah.
So let me put you on the spot. If you could read us a poem or two, I'd be delighted to give the audience an idea of the work we're talking about here.
I'd love to. And this first one's called "I Met God at the Supermarket." "I Met God at the Supermarket." I said, "You're right." I said, "Yeah, you." He goes, "What's in your mind?" "Just getting some food." But I think he could tell because I look kind of sad. He said, "Go on then, ask." I said, "Why are things bad? Like, why is it hard? Like, sometimes it's shit. Sometimes it's like, oh my God, is this it?" He goes, "I can tell you that now, but you won't like the answer." I said, "Don't give me riddles, man. I'm not calling you master." He said, "Fair enough. I'll give you it straight. You know, in a film or story or play, the bit when you think it's all fucked, there's no way the lead can survive, and suddenly, yay, something good happens, and then they're okay, and they learn something true and new on the way. Well, it's basically that. You'd be bored without this. You wouldn't know what a good bit is. Like, what, just a film about someone who's fine, and then nothing happens, and wow, it's all right." He said, "Trust me, I've tried it. Before you were born, when no one was rich and no one was poor and no one was cold, just happy and warm, and it was so shit. They all went to war just to find reasons to feel something more. So now it's like this. You hit, then you miss, then hit, and then win, you know, that kind of thing." You could tell by my face I was still kind of pissed. He said, "I tried to tell you. You won't like the gift." "So when does it end?" He said, "Oh, in 5 minutes." I said, wait, what? "I've got so much to give. Just give me more time. I'm sorry, forgive. My dreams are undreamt, lost words on my lips. I missed all the sunsets and cliches and shit, and loving my love and time with my kids." And then he goes, "Ah, does someone find a reason? Look forward to something, have faith that there's meaning." I went, "Oh no, you got me, a prick. Now here's your time back. Now fuck off and live."
It is
Thank you.
"I Met God at the Supermarket" from the collection "I Still Believe in Miracles: Poems to Find Meaning in Difficult Times," Lucas Jones. Watching you do that, and I notice this when I see you on the various platforms, your right hand is going, or I guess your left hand. Left hand? Left hand.
Yes, I think left, yeah.
Yeah, left hand. But is that almost a metronome?
Oh, that's, yeah, do you know what? I've never considered that, but I think it probably is. It's a sort of, it's also like, I feel like there has to be, I'm a very physical person in my day-to-day life, but I feel like that has to, like, poetry to me, and maybe some of that anger you talk about as well, spoken speech to me and word to me is such a physical thing. Like, I sometimes, even in the, when I write, it's actually even about the shape of the word. It's not even so much the word I'm using, like the physicality and the sort of imagery of all of this. Like literally the shapes of the letters on the page sometimes feel like the right thing to me. And I feel like that even comes out in the performance sometimes. It's like there's something kind of violent or physical or like an exorcism to this stuff in some way. So I can't seem to stay still.
I'm curious. You did a poem, wrote a poem for President Trump's 80th birthday.
Yes, yeah, I did.
And it blew me away for a couple of reasons. One, and the preamble to this is going to be better than the actual question. Just be ready for
I'm locked in. I'm all there with you.
But it was so meaningful. It was so incredible. It was so in the moment. I mean, that's the thing. It was so in the moment. It was that day, and all the feelings that we were feeling were just wrapped up into that poem. And then I just thought, wow, this is like, I feel this as an American, but you're feeling this as a British citizen, and I'm curious as to how that anger translates.
It feels a little bit sometimes like going around a friend's house you really love and hearing their parents fight, and they're slightly sometimes immune to it, and you're new to the scenario, so you're sort of like, is this how it is every day? And sometimes it feels a little bit like that as a British person looking in at American politics, because you think you wonder if, and it's confirmed to me actually, because there's so much back and forth communication online, isn't it? So quick, like you say, that I'm always nervous to talk about that and to talk about the politics of another country in a sense. But I think the world's become sort of so, you, ironically, kind of unified in its reception of news and the conflation of sort of individual life and the political world we live in, that like I sort of feel more tapped into US politics than over here sometimes, because that's the stuff I consume online, and the sort of theatrics of it is so present. And you can, so yeah, and I'm not sure if that's an exclusive thing to a unique thing to to how I have used internet. But I feel like a lot of, like over here, we talk about American politics a lot. And I sometimes feel like it actually allows a slightly, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because I could definitely be wrong by this. Sometimes I feel like it being slightly removed from it allows you actually a bit more of an
Oh,
objective
sure.
vantage point. You can see the mountain a little bit clearer from a distance.
Right.
And I wonder, of course, I'm sure I'm biased in ways that I'll never understand. I'm sure there's lies I've believed that I will never know are lies. But yeah, it's nice to hear. Thank you for saying that, because it's always nerve-wracking to talk about a place that I'm not
Well,
in.
the thing you keyed into in that poem, which struck me, because again, it was in the moment. I read it. It was that day. And the thing you keyed into, which I didn't feel here in the States that enough people were keying into, was the violence, the inherent violence. And that struck me. And I think that does what you just described of from the outside looking in, that gave it that perspective that many of us, I think, sadly, may just be used to.
Yeah, I that's terrifying in a way to hear, because I can't help but I've made this analogy a few times, that it's like watching someone in an abusive relationship. All the tactics, all the sort of behavior, all the gaslighting, all the narcissistic tendencies. It feels, there's a poem in the book actually called "This Country is an Abusive Parent" about exactly that, and it's there's no difference in the behavior. I really believe that individuals' behavior is just a microcosm of governmental behavior or great big systems and corporations. I think we are just human through and through to the end. So what you would experience with one individual abuser in a relationship with one person is essentially the same dynamic you're going to see with an entire government governing an entire people, is my belief. And it feels like that. And the violence is the thing that I think is so shocking. And especially coming from a place where, we don't have guns and we don't have the sort of, headlines that you receive so regularly over there, just regarding school mass shootings, that kind of thing. The shock is I don't, I mean, I'd be interested here actually from your point, like, does that shock ever, where, like, do you ever become immune to that shock? Do you ever see the news and think, oh, what's that again? Because from over here, it's like, what happened? That happened once. The fact that it ever happened once is every single time astounding.
Well, to give you a long, short answer, I mean, I think in this country, a lot of us, many of us, looked at it as there was, as it was starting up, there was a great concern that it would become normalized, that the behavior would become normalized, and that people, that it wouldn't be shocking anymore. And after 10 years, well, that's exactly what's happened. In my opinion, I mean, it's become normalized, because it don't it, it, it I can't think of anything that wouldn't. I mean, it does shock you to a point, because you talk about it. I mean, I do a talk show every day, and we end up talking about it, because you're like, really? Really, that happened. Oh, okay, that happened. But then you get around to, like, well, of course that happened, because this, 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 and this happened 5 days before.
Of course. Yeah, I absolutely. Again, to bring that analogy again, it sort of feels like if you've ever known anyone to experience the misfortune of being in a physically abusive relationship, it's like the first time something happens, everyone is, oh my, you have to get out of there. 5 years down the line, it's just like, oh, well, wasn't it me here, but it wasn't,
Yeah.
it wasn't.
You're
And
still
then
here.
that kind of feels like you're still
Yeah.
here. Exactly. Well, it could be worse. It could be worse. And you start to, that frog in boiling water analogy that people use often, where, if you put a frog in boiling water, it jumps out. If you heat up very, very slowly, it doesn't realize, that kind of thing. So it's, it's a disturbing thing to see things like, because I respond very presently to what happens in the news, especially in American politics. And sometimes there's a strange dopamine reward from the internet for doing that. And then you accidentally sort of feel this kind of guilt, for almost capitalizing on a tragedy, if you know what I mean. And it's quite an odd position to be in sometimes. That's just a thought I'm throwing out for the first time out
No,
loud. It wasn't going to be, but.
well, that's fascinating, because well, that brings me to two questions. One, do you read the comments?
I do actually, yeah, I do. And I'm still not sure whether I'm okay with that. But I can't seem
Well, I
to
wouldn't think you would be, but sure. I mean, even positive or
I
negative, but mostly negative. I mean, it would seem like, because it's not just it's attacking art in your case.
Yeah, I've kind of created these sort of rules around it where, because I really don't like conflict, despite how much conflict I seem to be in these days all the time on the internet from talking about things as I believe I see them. And sometimes you say a thing that you think is really a universal belief, like mustn't harm children ever, right, guys? And suddenly you'll be amazed at how many people will be in the comments like, well, actually, if you, you know, and you're like, okay, we're not all on the same page, it turns out. I thought there were some base, I thought there were some universal principles we agreed on, which it turns out
God.
isn't necessarily the truth. But I do have some rules around it where mainly just on sort of like a, people always make the comparison of the internet comments section is now the sort of town square where you should all be allowed to say your opinion. I kind of agree, but I think at least in the town square, you would have to be in person and face to face, and you wouldn't be allowed to hide behind an account with zero followers and no profile picture. So my kind of rule is like, if it's just pure hate, pure trolling, vicious, intended to cause harm to me or somebody else, you don't get to have, you're not a part of the conversation. If it's valid criticism or a different opinion, I'm all for that, and I think it's important. And something quite fascinating happens actually, because I. Alongside this sort of political stuff, we'll talk about mental health issues and, you know, depression and grief and universal things. I think sometimes I accidentally break out of the echo chamber because everyone agrees with those things, or sorry, everyone experiences those things.
Yeah.
So sometimes there'll be a run of poems where I'll be talking about those sorts of things, those universal human experiences, and then I'll drop a slightly political thing, and suddenly they'll go, "Oh, I didn't realize you thought that," and suddenly the comment section will be a sort of refreshed algorithm of people who actually disagree, which is kind of amazing sometimes to see, because you'll see them argue, then end up at a bit of resolution. And the arguments they're making are always one degree away from each other. If they were communicating more clearly, you'd be like, you actually agree. I can see you agreeing most of the time, but you've been fed alternative information that's causing you to clash and collide. It's really fascinating to watch from sort of objective point of view, if I'm objective.
Well, so there's the second question, which is, I mean, I would think you could be as objective as you can be, but my question for you is, does it impact the word choice? Does it impact the work? Does it impact does it bury itself in your head to say, all right, well, maybe I heard, and then maybe I won't do this, but I'll do that, and or screw it. And the reason I ask this question of you specifically is because it seems so it's so guttural. It seems so innate to who you are.
I do you know what, Joe? I hate having to get into these fights, but I hate myself ever so slightly more if I don't say exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
And that trade-off ends up being the thing that wins out. So in the end, I sometimes I'm tempted to sort of self-censor and be like, oh, I know saying that's going to cause a bunch of, you know, an uproar. But that's what I mean sometimes. You know, sometimes like that's the only word I want to that's the word closest to the truth as far as I see it. And I do also think that when you have that feeling, and I think a lot of artists probably feel this way, that when you have that feeling of that this is kind of dangerous and scary, it's probably the thing you have to say. It's probably the thing you have to do, even though you personally wish you didn't have to go through the sort of trial of having to say it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you see this? You have this book out, which is highly successful. You still, what's your schedule? I mean, in the sense of, do you consider a daily deadline? Do you consider this as you wish it to be?
In terms of the actual practical sort of day-to-day of things,
Yes. Well, of poetry, I mean, do you say to yourself, well, I hope I have seven by the end of the week, or is that not even in the
Oh, I see.
calculus?
I tend to wake up and write something in the morning every day. It's not with the sort of pressure of I have to finish anything, but I tend to find that sort of like morning period, weirdly, when usually when I'm in the shower, literally in the shower, which is a terrible habit, but I'll literally be in the shower writing on my phone, like leaning out of the shower, writing on my phone a poem. And I tend to find that if it's anything worth writing, it comes quite quickly. If it's something that I have to really dig for, usually it's not worth digging for. Usually it ends up sort of dying and not being that interesting. I don't put the kind of pressure on myself of having to do anything actually, but I do commit in a quite a disciplined way to sort of just sitting down, looking at the page and being like, see what happens today, see what comes out today. And I love it as well. So that's the other thing. I love writing. Sometimes it won't be a poem, it'll just be some ideas, you know, but
Right.
it's how I self-soothe, really, I think. So I can't seem to stop.
Do you see yourself as even with a collection, and when you're writing in the moment, I mentioned the poem about the present, I mean, that has a shelf life, right? So it is then when it comes to a collection, it's, I assume that it passes some test to you of, okay, this is something that is still important to say.
That is a good point, because there are some poems that you know for the day. If so, if there's a big news story that, you know,
Right.
in 3 weeks it's no longer be relevant even, and the facts probably have changed. But I think you're right that the ones worth keeping are the ones that are true today and true in 100 years, I think. If that's kind of how I that's kind of yeah that's probably the sort of unspoken litmus test of whether it deserves to go into the book or not.
The book is just out. It's called I Still Believe in Miracles, just out in this country, I should say. I Still Believe in Miracles, Poems to Find Meaning in Difficult Times, and it's published by Union Square. Lucas Jones, what a delight. I'll tell you, it's I you changed a lot of my life when I started finding your work and reading it regularly, and this book is very special in a wonderful way to put that into one place, because I think a lot of us do need it.
That's so kind of you. Thank you so much for saying that and for having me on.
Again, Lucas Jones is the author of I Still Believe in Miracles, Poems to Find Meaning in Difficult Times. The book is published by Union Square. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.